Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia, and this is another in this series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Augustine of Hippo's Harmony of the Evangelists. In this episode, we're going to be looking at Book 1, Chapters 24 and 25. Chapter 24, titled, Of the Fact That Those Persons Who Reject the God of Israel in consequence, fail to worship all the gods, and on the other hand, that those who worship other gods fail to worship him. It is well understood, therefore, what these worshippers of images are convicted in reality of revering, and what they attempt to color over. But even these new interpreters of Saturn must be required to tell us what they think of the God of the Hebrews. For to them also it seemed right to worship all the gods, as is done by the heathen nations, because their pride made them ashamed to humble themselves under Christ for the remission of their sins. What opinion, therefore, do they entertain regarding the God of Israel? For if they do not worship him, then they do not worship all gods. And if they do worship him, they do not worship him in the way that he has ordained for all his worship, for his own worship, because they worship others also whose worship he has interdicted. Against such practices he issued his prohibition by the mouth of those same prophets, by whom he also announced beforehand this destined occurrence of those very things which their images are now sustaining at the hands of the Christians. For whatever the explanation may be, whether it be that angels were sent to those prophets to show them figuratively, and by the congruous forms of visible objects, the one true God, the creator of all things, to whom the whole universe is made subject, and to indicate the method in which he enjoined his own worship to proceed, or whether it was that the minds of some among them were so mightily elevated by the Holy Spirit as to enable them to see those things in that kind of vision in which the angels themselves behold objects. In either case, it is the incontestable fact that they did serve that God who has prohibited the worship of other gods. And moreover, it is equally certain that with the faithfulness of piety in the kingly and in the priestly office, they ministered at once for the good of their country and in the interest of those sacred ordinances which were significant of the coming of Christ as the true king and priest. Chapter 25, which is titled, Of the Fact That the False Gods Do Not Forbid Others to Be Worshipped Along with Themselves, That the God of Israel is the True God, is proved by His works, both in prophecy and in fulfillment. But further, in the case of the gods of the Gentiles, in their willingness to worship whom they exhibit their unwillingness to worship that God who cannot be worshipped together with them, let them tell us the reason why no one is found in the number of their deities who thinks of interdicting the worship of another, while they institute them in different offices and functions and hold them to preside, each one over objects which pertain properly to his own special provenance. For if Jupiter does not prohibit the worship of Saturn because he is not to be taken merely for a man who drove another man, namely his father, out of his kingdom, but either for the body of the heavens or for the spirit that fills the heaven and earth, and because thus he cannot prevent and that supernatural mind from being worshipped from which he is said to have emanated. If, on the same principle also, Saturn cannot interdict the worship of Jupiter, because he is not to be supposed to be merely one who has conquered by that other in rebellion, as was the case with a person of the same name by the hand of someone or other called Jupiter, from whose arms he was fleeing when he came into Italy. And because the primal mind favors the mind that springs from it, yet Vulcan at least might be expected to put under the ban the worship of Mars. The paramour of his wife and Hercules might be thought likely to interdict the worship of Juno, his persecutor. What kind of foul consent must subsist among them if even Diana, the chaste virgin, fails to interdict the worship, I do not say merely of Venus, but even of Priapus. For if the same individual decides to be at once a hunter and a farmer, he must be the servant of both these deities, and yet he will be ashamed to do even so much as erect temples for them side by side. But they may aver that by the interpretation of Diana, they meant a certain virtue, be it what they please. And they may tell us that Priapus really denotes the deity of fecundity, to such an effect, at any rate, that Juno may well be ashamed to have such a coadjutor in the task of making females fruitful. They may say what they please. They may put any explanation upon these things which in their wisdom they think fit. Only in spite of all that, the God of Israel will confound all their argumentations. For in prohibiting all those deities from being worshipped, while his own worship is hindered by none of them, and in at once commanding, foretelling, and effecting destruction for their images and sacred rites, he has shown with sufficient clearness that they are false and lying deities, and that he himself is the one true and truthful God. Moreover, to whom should it not seem strange that those worshippers now become few in number, of deities both numerous and false, should refuse to do homage to him of whom, when the question is put to them as to what deity he is, they dare not at least assert, whatever answer they may think to give, that he is no God at all? For if they deny his deity, they are very easily refuted by his works, both in prophecy and in fulfillment. I do not speak of those works which they deem themselves at liberty not to credit, such as his work in the beginning when he made the heavens and the earth, and all that is in them. Neither do I specify here those events which carry us back into the remotest antiquity, such as the translation of Enoch, the destruction of the impious by the flood, and the saving of righteous Noah and his house from the deluge by means of the ark of wood. I begin the statement of his doings among men with Abraham. To this man, indeed, was given by an angelic oracle an intelligible promise, which we now see in its realization. For to him it was said, "In thy seed shall all nations be blessed." Of his seed, then, sprang the people of Israel, whence came the Virgin Mary, who was the mother of Christ. And that in him all the nations are blessed, let them now be bold enough to deny if they can. This same promise was made also to Isaac, the son of Abraham. It was given again to Jacob, the grandson of Abraham. This Jacob was also called Israel, from whom that whole people derived both its descent and its name, so that indeed the God of this people was called the God of Israel. Not that he is not also the God of the Gentiles, whether they are ignorant of him or now know him, but that in this people he willed that the power of his promise should be made more conspicuously apparent. For that people, which at first was multiplied in Egypt, and after a time was delivered from a state of slavery there by the hand of Moses, with many signs and portents, saw most of the Gentile nations subdued under it, and obtained possession also of the land of promise, in which it reigned in the person of kings of its own, who sprang from the tribe of Judah. This Judah also was one of the 12 sons of Israel, the grandson of Abraham. And from him were descended the people called the Jews, who, with the help of God himself, did great achievements, and who also, when he chastised them, endured many sufferings on account of their sins, until the coming of that seed to whom the promise was given, in whom all the nations were to be blessed, and for whose sake they were willing to break in pieces the idols of their fathers. Here ends book 1 and chapters 24 and 25, and we're going to move on now to some notes and commentary on these two chapters. We start with chapter 24 of book 1, again titled, "Of the Fact That Those Persons Who Reject the God of Israel in Consequence Fail to Worship All the Gods, and on the other hand, that those who worship other gods fail to worship him." Having discussed pagan confusion concerning the God of the Bible, confusing him with Saturn and Jupiter in the previous chapters, Augustine returns to his primary apologetic point against paganism, namely that the pagan continuation of the worship of the gods and the rejection of the worship of Christ is both inconsistent with the tolerant theology of paganism, which all gods are equally worshipped, and with Christian theology, which dictates that only Christ should be worshipped. He also stresses that the exclusive worship of Christ was announced beforehand through the Old Testament prophets in their denunciation of idolatry. In chapter 25, titled, "Of the Fact That False Gods Do Not Forbid Others to Be Worshipped Along with Themselves, That the God of Israel is the True God Is Proved by His Works, Both in Prophecy and in Fulfillment," Augustine continues his apologetic against paganism by noting that none of the gods, even if mightier and more virtuous than another god, ever attempts to interdict or prevail over the worship of any other god. Jupiter, for example, does not interdict the worship of Saturn, and chaste Diana does not interdict the worship of even Priapus. The God of Israel, however, forbids the worship of any other gods by images and rites. And thus, according to Augustine, he shows that the pagan gods are false and lying deities, and the God of Israel is the one true and faithful God. The pagans have no right to reject the one true God, according to Augustine, because God's works prove him to be true. Augustine surveys various events from the Bible to illustrate these works. He says that he doesn't begin with the primordial history, so he doesn't start with the translation of Enoch, the flood, and Noah's Ark, but he begins in Genesis 12 with the story of Abraham and the promise made to Abraham, "And thy seed shall all the nations be blessed." He talks about the patriarchs, how Abraham and Isaac and Jacob led to the people of Israel, and how Moses was the deliverer. And from Abraham came the Jews, and also from Abraham came the seed from the tribe of Judah, Jesus, who would bless the nations. And he says that the fulfillment of these works, again, demonstrate the truth of the God of Christianity. And he notes that those who are adherents to this new religion, Christianity, are now willing to break apart the idols of their fathers. In conclusion, Augustine uses the quality of toleration in the practice of pagan religion as a tool against that religion. He points to its logical inconsistencies. How can you have multiple gods where one isn't superior to another? Arguing that the biblical concept of one true God is intellectually superior, and that the truth of this one God is proven by his actions in history. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. Hope this has been edifying and encouraging for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next episode in this series. Till then, take care and God bless.